You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is William Parmer, and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. And in today's episode, our very own Charles Rose Jr. will be talking about how he purchased 8 properties last year, 6 of which were duplexes, and how he broke through multiple challenges to get to the closing table. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Parmer.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is William Parmer, and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is Charles Rose Jr., my awesome co-host and fellow coach with a Master Passive Income. Charles, how are you doing today, man?
Man, I am doing fantastically well. It's always good to be on the show and recording with you, man.
Yeah, I always look forward to it. And today I'm really looking forward to it. I've been wanting to do this episode for a hot minute, and now we can because you got your refinance all figured out. So today I would like to dive into, you bought 8 properties last year, but I want to dive into 6 of them particularly. These 6 are actually duplexes. So it's quite an increase in like size when a lot of people think about it. So how'd you buy 6 of them as opposed to everything else? But I also want to put a little shameless plug in there for a future episode, which is the other 2 properties. One was a seller finance deal, and then the other one was a out-of-country purchase in the Dominican Republic. So I definitely want to touch on those, but we're going to have to come back because we cannot fit all of this in one episode. But I definitely would like to touch on what was the deal with the 6 duplexes and how'd you find that? Where were they? How did you do the financing on this thing?
Man, William, first of all, it's as always, it's so good to be here with you. And I know you did some awesome deals too that I want us to share too next year. So you beat me to it being able to share my story, but I want to share your story. So shameless plug, we're going to break down William's story. As William said, we can't like, William and I, like we will talk your ear off, especially William, but I can't put it all
wrong.
Meet us at a conference. Then we'll sit down for 3 hours or something. But yes, William. So how did I do it? So this was, yes, this is actually the biggest transaction that I actually did on my own. And when I say on my own, definitely with my wife. I have to give my wife credit because she has been by my side from the very beginning, from supporting me to now even like running the business with me. So I definitely can't take all the credit, William. I know you said Charles, but it's also Charles and Catherine. So I want to give a shout out to my wife, Catherine Rose, for helping me along the way. So here's, you know, how that deal came along. So last year, I really wasn't looking for more properties, honestly. I mean, believe it or not, I really wasn't looking. I'm at a place in my portfolio where there comes a place where you buy and buy properties. Then you try to get to that place where you're like, you know, I really don't want to buy a property unless it's a really good deal. Or maybe I want to invest in a bigger asset class, right? You're kind of in that scale mode. So last year I was thinking, you know, maybe, you know, I'll team up with someone and buy a multifamily property or a mobile home park or just something of that sort. And, you know, I was at that place where I was stabilizing my business. But, you know, being an investor, if a good deal comes across my desk or my email, I'm going to look at it, you know, and believe it or not. And so I do get some deals from wholesalers, from friends who call me up, from connections. Believe it or not, I happen to see a deal come in on Zillow. Literally in my email.
But you saw this come up on Zillow?
My email. And honestly, nowadays, like, I'll be honest with you, like, don't do this. Like, you need, especially if you get started, look at every email. Yeah. I'm telling you. But nowadays, I don't really look at, like, you know, Zillow or Redfin emails. I look at more, if an email come in from William Parmer, you know, got a great, I'm going to look at that deal, right? I'm going to look at that email. But Zillow and Redfin and Realtor.com, I don't look at it as much as I used to at the beginning, just because, you know, most of my leads come in off market, right? William, talk about a seller finance deal that I closed. And, you know, so anyway, so long story short, I just happened to click this email from Zillow. This package of 6 duplexes had just been listed online. And I looked at the price that they wanted for it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like a really good price. You know, I mean, I think they wanted something like 85 a duplex or something in the package deal. And I know, because I know this was in Memphis, Tennessee. I know the area, and I was like, man, these properties are going for minimum 130K. 130K on a duplex in Memphis would be a good deal, right? Because they go anywhere from 130K to 200K, depending on the area, right? And sometimes more if it's a fancy area. So anyway, so I saw this, and I was like, oh, something's, this deal looks good. And so I was like, I need to, like, there's sometimes I work with a lot of investor-friendly realtors, and then sometimes I go directly to the listing agent. I was like, let me do some digging on this deal myself. I reached out to the listing agent directly, and I couldn't even get on the phone with her, and somebody, her assistant, was like, well, you got to text her because she's, you know, she just had a throat surgery. And so I sent her a text message introducing myself, letting her know I'm an investor in the Memphis area, and I'm really interested in this deal. So she was like, the seller has already verbally accepted another offer. So I was like, oh my, this deal, I said, but the deal just got listed that quick. She said, yes, the sellers are very motivated to sell. Oh my gosh, that's all she had to tell me. She told me the sellers were motivated to sell.
So now I want to ask though, in knowing that an offer had already been verbally accepted, did that deter you at all? Or did that just light more of a fire, be like, okay, well, I'm going to throw one in the mix as well?
Come on, William. You know me. But the audience, oh,
I know
may not
you,
know
but
me.
This is for the audience. I know
the audience
you.
Me. So I never accept no as an answer. You know, as William mentioned, I had a seller finance deal. Well, that took 3 years to close, and after multiple no's. So we'll get back to that on another.
Oh yeah, that's
episode.
A good one too.
Right. So I don't accept no as an answer. Right. Even you, it may be a no for you, but in my mind, is a not yet. Right. So I was like, ooh. So most people, a lot of times, they try to, like, you know, when they find that, they try to, like, immediately try to, you know, more of something transactional. I was like, okay, we got to go somewhere with this. So I was like, okay, I need to build a relationship with this realtor who has those type of clients. So, you know, I started, like, talking to her, you know, seeing, you know, how she's doing, where she's from, blah, blah, blah. And she just, like, literally, she was texting me back. We were having a whole conversation. And I said, oh, by the way, I know you said the sellers are motivated. Like, what's going on? Is there anything that they need help with? You know, are their family okay? And then so she was like, yeah, well, you know, the family has been in the property has been in the family since 1963, these properties, and the owner never wanted to sell, but the owner passed away, left it to the mom. Then the mom got, you know, sick, and so she transferred the properties over to, you know, her kids, you know, the grandkids of the owner, and the grandkids don't want to own properties. They don't want to deal with it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, in my mind, like, I was like opportunity, like, you know, it was like,
yeah, just going on. Yeah.
Have you seen one of those slots machines in the casinos? Like, yeah. When you hit the jackpot, I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, okay. That's it. Oh wow. I said, man, I completely understand why they don't want to, you know, they don't want to deal with the stresses of being a landlord. You know, I have some of them, but I really enjoy it. This is what I do. But I said, I know sometimes, you know, doing deals, sometimes things don't work out. Could you, you know, keep me as a backup offer? And then she was like, yeah, absolutely, I can do that. And then I was like, you know, I don't want to, you know, hey, I don't want to offend the seller with, you know, I want to make sure, I want to give you a backup offer that I know the seller will take and that will not offend them. And, you know, I said, I am a closer. I said, I can close in as little as 7 days, right? And you all, if you're listening, you will get to that point. So just totally fine. So I was like, I can close in a little seven days. And so I want to make sure I give an offer that the seller will take if it falls through. And so obviously the realtor, you know, cannot, you know, they can't tell you, you know, they can't give you certain information.
Right. They can't say make this offer and they'll accept it.
But she said the seller, you know, would accept minimum this. That's all she said. And they can do that because sellers, you know, they can do that, right?
Right.
It doesn't tell you how much to offer, but they tell you the minimum. We want to take this time to tell you about our real estate investing course that we are giving away completely free. This course has helped countless people become real estate investors, including us. And now is your turn.
That's right, Charles. Text the word rental, R-E-N-T-A-L, to 33777, and we'll give you the MPI Real Estate Investing Course completely free. And if you got anything out of this show, please share it with at least one other person to help them invest in real estate also.
So what I did was, so the minimum offer, so what I did was I offered like $2,750 more than the minimum. I was like, you know what? I was like, this minimum, I was like, $2,750 is like, you know.
It's enough to change anything.
No, I was like, but it's like, you know, but it might put me in the lead, right? And so that was the end of that conversation. So this was that morning. I remember it was on a Friday morning. So she reached out to me by lunchtime that day, and she was like, The seller has not signed the, you know, it was a verbal yes to the person they were with, and said the seller would actually like to take your offer. I was yeah. And then, but she said, if you can provide, you know, proof of funds by the end of the day. So I was like, oh my goodness.
Wow. So like when you said that, you know, that old Eminem song, knees weak, arms are heavy. I feel like that would be my reaction immediately. So I don't know how you felt, but that's how I would feel immediately.
Dude, I was like, I mean, it was like fireworks going on in the inside of me.
I bet.
I was literally like, I was so excited. So anyway, so I was like, okay, well, I got to call my private money guy, right? Because I don't have, you know, almost 500K sitting around, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yet, you know, I may have that in assets, but not in dollars. So I called my private money guy right away. And I said, dude, you know, this is the deal I'm looking at. I'd like to close. He said, Charles, this is a phenomenal deal. Yes, I will fund it 100%. And do you need closing costs? Do you need?
Like, yes, I need closing costs.
I said, yes, yes, and yes. And so I said, well, here's what I need. I said, I said right away, I need proof of funds letter from you. And so he's like, how much you want me to put on it? I was like, you know, whatever you want to put on it, you know. I think he put it like up to $1 million or whatever, which was more than enough. And so I got it in quickly, and I had so much confidence, because that's one of the cool things too, like when you're working with a lender or an experienced, mm-hmm. you know, investor, that's like a second pair of eyes on the deal for you. So that even validated my choice even more that it was a good deal. And I also ran it through my property manager. I'm at the point where I know Memphis a lot, but I still vet it. I still check with my property manager and, you know, my team on the ground to kind of, you know, advise me just to make sure I'm doing a good deal.
Yeah. And this is one of those things where building your business first absolutely pays off, because it wasn't that you needed to necessarily, and I'm sure you did, but you didn't necessarily need to run every single number on these properties to know this was a good property, because you knew the area really well because you already invest there, and you've built your team to be able to handle something like this pretty fast.
100%. Yeah. So you are 100% right, William. I immediately knew that it was a good deal without even running the numbers. I did run the numbers too, but when I first talked to the listing agent, I did not run the numbers yet. I just, like, on paper, like in my mind, I knew it would work, but I did run it before, you know, I submitted an offer to see if the minimum that the seller wanted would work. And so, yeah, so I got the proof of funds, got everything in. By the end of that day on a Friday, we had a signed contract.
Oh my goodness. Way to wake plexus. Up in the morning, think it's a normal day, and then just takes off.
I know. Yeah. So it was just awesome. So I was just super excited to get that deal on the contract. And yeah, we ended up closing, I think, in maybe like 20 days. And the cool thing, William, was there was so much opportunity. Like, first of all, the property was in good condition, literally.
Wow,
I mean, it was
awesome.
And literally, of the 12 units, 11 of them were, you know, had tenants in it. So it's like, yeah.
So were these under rented as well? Was there?
They were under rented. So that was.
Oh, my goodness. This gets better and better.
I know, in that area, the rental rate is anywhere from $850 to $1,000, right? Mm-hmm. And they were all rented for around $300.
Oh my goodness gracious. No wonder your private money guy wanted to jump on that.
The owner had never raised rent. So some of the tenants were there for like over 20 years.
I mean,
why would they move? William, if somebody's charging you $300 for rent, would you move?
No, not at all. Not at all.
You know, so which I can relate to that. I mean, I had a situation like that too. You know, I was like, I was renting for many years because I was paying right around $300. So I completely get it, right? So that was huge for me. That was a really, really good deal, man.
So walk me through the next steps of this process. You've got an accepted offer. You've already got your proof of funds, all this other stuff. But what was your plan as far as getting out of your private money and get this into a more, were you doing a more traditional bank type loan or cash out refi? How did that process go, and kind of how long did that take you to do that?
Oh, man. So here comes the fun part. So normally, you know, when I buy with private money or hard money, I'm just using that money on a short-term basis upfront to purchase the property. Now, these short-term deals, these short-term loans are only from 6 months to 12 months or 18 months, right? So usually 6 to 18 months, that's kind of like, you know, the short-term time frame, average of 12 months, right? But every time I do it, I normally turn it around in like 3 months. Like literally, like I'm like in and out because these short-term loans are a lot more expensive, but it could make sense if you're going to get 100% financing and you're buying the property for a steep enough discount. Then it could make sense because essentially the equity per se of the property is paying for all of those fees and you're doing a nothing down deal. So if you bring in $0 to the closing table, then your returns are infinite, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So my plan was to refinance that property within 3 months, and all the lenders like wanted that deal. That's how good it was, right? They all wanted the deal. So the plan was to refinance it within 3 months into a long-term loan. So now I primarily do DSCR loans or portfolio loans and put the properties completely in my LLC, the entity and the loan, right? So I normally put it all in my LLC. And so that was the plan. I literally got it, you know, and so I quickly hit the ground running. I took care of some minor repairs. My repair budget literally underran to William. That's how good these properties were. They were in, awesome. Like, my home inspector was like, Charles, he said, these properties are in like really good condition. He said, if you don't buy these, I'll buy them, right?
Wow, that's great.
And the thing about it too was the property had multiple backup offers that were higher than mine. You know, wow. when I initially bought it, but you know, by then I closed it at this point. So anyway, so here's, you know, where, you know, some of the breakthroughs had to come in, right? So like I told you, these deals, I normally do 3 months, boom, I'm done.
Right, right.
So right at almost that 3 month point, it was, you know, 2 months and a half, right? I was ready to go, ready to refinance, right? I had to do so much work. Like I also had to bring up rents to William because with DSCR loans, debt service coverage ratio, they're pretty much looking at the financial strength of the properties. So my lender told me that each property has to be making at least $1,000, right? Right now we were at 600 property. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I brought rents up to 600 per unit, even though I could have gotten, you know, closer to 900.
Here's a question before I forget, because you know me, my mind is a little bit like grasshopper, jumps from one place to another real fast. When you raised it, how did you raise the rents with your tenants? Did they leave with the $300 jump per unit? How did that work?
Oh man, that's a good question. So I strategically raised the rents. And what I did, William, so I got my property manager and I even hired like almost like not a consultant, but, you know, someone to kind of help, you know, speed up this process. Right.
Right.
And so I strategically did this. I was like, OK, I know that I can get closer to 900 per property. I know that without a doubt. But I also know that if I raise it to market rent, I'm going to be competing with other properties nearby. Right. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want any competition. Right. So because I need to do this fast, I could always raise the rents later on, right? And it's such a great deal, I could still make it work with a lower rent of 600, right? And these tenants have been there many years. I mean, I was like, is this for real? Like literally, like, I mean, like even the rents were low, but the tenants had like a perfect payment history. Like they were
this
good
is
tenants.
Like, this is like the heavens have parted kind of moment.
Yes. I mean, like even like, you know, the funding, I mean, the relationship with the realtor, everything was like, you see what I'm saying? So I was like, okay. So I was like, I actually chose 600. I strategically chose 600 because I was like, I want to make it a no-brainer for them to renew. And here's what I also did for a no-brainer, William. I gave them the first month rent free if they sign the agreement.
But that's great because you don't actually need the rent. You just need the contract to show that the DSCR is covered.
Yep. That's all I need to get this thing closed.
That's phenomenal.
Right. And so I was like, okay, so it was a no brainer. So I told you, you know, there were 11 tenants there, right? Mm-hmm. Of the 11 tenants, 10 of them renewed. No, not 10. Of the 11 tenants, 9 of them renewed.
Okay. So you had 2 units you had to turn over plus the one that was empty.
Exactly. Yep. Okay. So I only had to find 3 new tenants.
I bet that didn't take very long, especially if you're under market rent for the other units as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I also charged that. That's why it was so easy to find a tenant. Like I literally had one tenant. She rented both sides of a duplex because it was like they couldn't find, they wanted to rent in that area and they couldn't find anywhere where it's 600. you know, for a rent ready duplex. So anyway, so that was easy to fill those units in. So I got all of them filled up. Like, they literally signed the agreement and sent me the deposit before they moved in, because they wanted to lock in that deal. Right.
That's great.
So got everything ready to go. Now, here's the first issue we had, right? Oh, you got to love appraisers.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm getting through the breakthrough, right? We're talking, you know, I love how one of our guests talk about as walls. You got to break through each wall, right? Mm-hmm. So, because we're breakthrough investors. So here's the first wall I had to break through. All right. So I had that 2.5 month park, was ready to close, had all the appraisals in, blah, 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 right? The appraisers, got to love them. They came in a little bit low, not like extremely low, but low enough where it put the loan threshold. So my lender minimum was like 100,000 minimum. And it literally put, like, you know, 75% of the ARV, literally put those loan amount. One was like 97,500 and one was like 99,000.
You're talking about per door, right?
Per
unit.
Loan per property, because the lender, they look at it per property, right? And because they were going to, so I had it in one, you know, loan, but they were going to break it out into six loans, one loan for each duplex. So it was like right under the threshold. And so they tried to get an exception, didn't go through. Okay. So I was like, wow. You know what I mean? So then they had so I was working with a mortgage broker. So they had a backup lender who could come in and do the deal. So now this backup lender, they would be able to do the deal. And interest rates at that time, you know, even with an excellent credit score, was like 8.37, because I locked in the rates from like May, right? You know, interest rates were going up at that point, right? Now this new lender, they were like, okay, well, we can only do 3 at 8.37 and then we can do 3 at 9%, right? And the other thing too was they, you know, I would have to bring, you know, because of the lower appraisals, I would have to bring about like 60K to the closing table.
Right.
Right. So I was like, you know, I wasn't happy about that, but I was like, you know, it's all good. And I had to run the repairs about 30,000. So really, you know, I had to bring about 30,000 to the closing table. Right. Which is good. If you look at that on a pocket deal, the side, I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I don't mind.
Acceptable.
That's acceptable. Right. And so then, and this new lender was much more strict. Oh my gosh. Like, they were like, it literally, the only thing they didn't ask me for is my blood type.
Yeah, just for reference, so everybody understands, we were at PodFest recently, and Charles was trying to be present at PodFest and at the same time trying to handle the last minute paperwork for this refi. He's like, dude, I got to pull my laptop out. I got to go sit down and fill out all this information and move this signature block, move this date, etc. It was crazy. And I just remember being like, man, I really hope he gets this thing under wraps while we're here. So it was quite the pressure, I'm sure.
It was quite a pressure, but this was actually a different lender that was like that too.
William. Oh, wait, so this is like, one previously?
Yeah, this was a different lender, right? So can you believe? Yeah, so literally, so remember I told you I had, you know, this I had a first lender, didn't work for them. So they had a partner, a different company who was going to do it. And a day before closing, William, and I was like kind of fed up with them because it was like stupid things they were asking for, literally. And so a day before closing, I decided to pull out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This was in September of last year.
Okay.
Reason why I pulled out is because interest rates had dropped to around 6%, right?
And
I
got they
locked
you in.
Yeah. I got multiple quotes around that, around the 6% mark, 6 to 7%, and they were, you know, 8.37 on three of them, and then 9% on three of them. So I was like, oh my gosh, like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, I need to lock in something lower. So I went back to the lender with these quotes. I was like, this is really high. Like, I said, I know you locked me in May, but in May interest rates were higher. And they refused to do it. So I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to close with them.
Wow. They actually refused to just give you a rate adjustment and relock you in at a lower rate. Why would they do that? They just walked on a great folio.
I know. And I would have even met them in the middle. Like, if they were like, okay, we can't do 6, but we can do 7. Mm-hmm. They said 7.5, literally. Like, if they dropped it even 1%, I would have, you know, I was like, because the thing is like, okay, I already have everything with them. I already have the appraisals done. So it's like, it would have been a safe move that I would have taken, right?
Yeah.
But when you're making these risks, I knew that there's a risk that, okay, maybe the other lender may not accept the appraisal. Maybe something may happen like that. But all of the other lenders I was talking to, they would accept a transfer of appraisal. They check to make sure.
Oh, that's a big thing.
On their list. So in my mind, I was like, okay, well, you know what? I can just, you know, take this to another lender. And most of them was like, they can close in a week, 1 to 2 weeks, because everything is ready, right?
Yeah.
And so I made a decision to back out in December, right? And so I was like, okay, yeah, well, I'm going to save a bunch of money. I did the math and everything. You know, I'm going to give you at 6%. So I started working with another lender, right? And for some reason, the lender I was working with, my credit score keep on showing up much lower. Like I was like, okay, I have a 795 credit score. You know, it could have been higher, but you know, I had some hard pulls from these mortgages and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I was like, I have 795 credit, like, and it keeps showing up in their system. My mid score kept showing up as like 700 or something like that.
Oh, okay.
But loans, like you get better interest rate the higher your credit score is, right? There's different tiers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's you know, under 700 is a score. 700 to 720, 720 to 740, 740 to 760. Above 760, you know, you're in a different category, and above 800, right? Essentially, in a nutshell, you know, the tiers might be different depending on the lender. So I was like, oh no, I was like, I need to be in the 795 tier. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so anyway, so which was, you know, that was the 6% interest rate was based off of being, you know, 795 credit score.
So where'd that interest rate land if you were in the 720s or whatever? Where'd that land?
So in the 720s, it would have been back at 8.37 or somewhere around there. So wow. I was like, this don't make any sense. You know what I mean? So I was like, okay, something's not going on. I even called the credit bureaus to figure out, and they were telling me, yeah, you know, you're at 795. And man, anyway, long story short, I was like, okay, something's going on. I was like trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, we were spending like a month trying to fight it and figure out what's going on, right? So now we're at, you know, now we're at October, right? October going into November, right? And I'm like, okay, something's crazy. And then I noticed interest rates were starting to creep back up. I was like, okay, what's going on? So long story short, William, end up finding out that there was a collection on my credit report from 2022 on one of my properties that I completely did not know about for utility bill. Did not know.
Oh, wow.
So I went into my utility bill account because I, you know, I pay my bills on time. You know what I mean? Like I will, you know, if any people know me, like, you know, I have a good, you know, credit history because I will literally sell a kidney to make sure I pay my bills, right? I believe in doing that. And so I looked at it. I was like, it showed us, you know, balance was cleared. I even sent it to the lender. I was like, something's wrong. So what ended up happening, William, is that was a property where I did repairs myself and not through my PM. So I had to turn on the utilities in my name.
Right.
I was paying the bills and everything. But with that utility company, the final bill goes to the it gets mailed to the property. And so, yeah, so I had to get all of that cleared. And oh, my gosh, I had to get all that, you know, cleared up and everything. But then it still shows up as a collection on the reports. So I was like, at this point, William, I was like, you know, This was a 6 months private money deal, and the interest rate would jump up to 18% if you don't close, right? Mm-hmm. My private guy, like he's really good at like deals, giving me money for deals doing 100%, but oh my gosh, he's serious about the 6 month turnaround. So anyway, I was like, okay, we gotta just close no matter what. Like we need to, you know what I mean? This is something that I just gotta close with whatever interest rate, right? So things were looking good with this next lender because they were gonna be able to use their appraisals. And they would be able to go to 80% of the appraised value, which would put me at a very, very little closing costs to almost none, you know? And so anyway, so we were going to go through. We were supposed to close before Thanksgiving. Ran into another issue, William. And this was like, and I'm like just giving you like the big issues. Like it was a bunch of little small issues in between, just in the interest of time. The lender found out that, you know, well, the underwriters would not accept the appraisal because it was more than 3 months old.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yeah. So I had to get a new set of appraisals, right? And I remember I had to get a new set of appraisals. And I was also, you know, going to the Dominican Republic, you know, for a couple of weeks to spend time with family and then also to set up the property we had just purchased. And so it was a lot of stuff going on. So I was like, okay.
You know, guys, that's one of those episodes we're going to talk about.
Yes, yes, we will. And so I was like, okay, so we got to, you know, we had a whole plan to like close at the embassy, U.S. embassy, the DR, or fly to Puerto Rico because it's close to the DR because it's a U.S. territory. So, you know, I had everything in place. Here's the big thing that happened, William. The new appraiser came in way lower than the previous appraisals.
Not again. So did you have to challenge that one?
Had to challenge it, but didn't budge. In my experience with appraisers, there's only one time an appraiser brought the appraised value up from $58,000 to $60,000, so $2,000 on a 100K property. So I've, you know, some appraisers are just terrible. Appraisers, if you are listening, you are ruining investors' lives. You are messing with them. And you need to stop, literally. Like, because William, you know, we have students and we know people in the industry, and they have the same issues with appraisers. Because even, you know, in some situations, I had one appraiser at $60,000, and then the other one came in at $120,000, the same property within 30 days. Another story for another day. Anyway, these ones came in lower. And man, I went through issue after issue, man. I mean, I had the lender that didn't want it in my Wyoming LLC. I had to put it in a Tennessee LLC. I had to do one thing after the next. I mean, small things. William saw some of those small issues, like literally like stupid things. Long story short, and honestly, William, I was like, I do not give up. That's the kind of person I am, and I was not going to give up. By the way, I will work until the banks take away the properties from me, like literally until they put locks on the door. That's the kind of person I am. But I will say, I did feel like, man, I did kind of question myself like a little bit, like, you know, were these good properties, or should I just like call my private mind lenders, like, hey man, you might as well just take these properties. I'm not going to deal with the stress anymore. Let me just keep my current portfolio. You know, the thought did come through my mind, I will say, but I was like, but I wouldn't do that, because I'm like, no way. Ain't no way I'm doing this. I'm going to fight until the very end. And so after all those things back and forth, I really don't want to say all the different things because it'll take time. I was finally able to close the properties last week, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which was, you know, a few days after, you know, William and I got back from PodFest in Florida. So I was able to finally close everything, finally get it done. I did have to close at a higher interest rate, and I did have to bring, you know, I had to bring like 100K to the closing table. I had to cash in some other assets and everything. You know, thankfully, you know, I diversify my investments. So, you know, thank the Lord, I was able to. I had some gains in some other asset classes, and which we can talk about on another episode. I had some gains, and so I was able to, you know, close, and it was a higher interest rate, but, you know, because I brought more to the closing table, you know, obviously my cash flow is much higher on these properties. So it was such a relief to get done. It was a journey, man. Talk about breakthrough. So my gosh.
Yeah, there's so many elements in there, and we could probably do an entire couple of episodes just based on some of the limitations and barriers you had to actually jump through. But I haven't actually, this is my first time hearing the entire story of this. So it's absolutely fascinating. And I didn't know it was actually going on that long. So, I mean, appraisers, nationally speaking, have been really difficult for the past, I would say, year and a half to 2 years. And so it's been something that a lot of investors have really had to deal with and figure out how to work with. But yeah, man, that was an awesome, awesome story. A lot of great value for perseverance, really pushing through and seeing stuff through the end. But the great thing is, like, this stuff is going to start paying itself down. And after a certain amount of time, hopefully interest rates will come back down and you'll be able to do a cash out refi and actually get this more where you want. But it sounds like, obviously, it was a good enough property still with all these headaches, and it's still cash flowing. So, and it's just added to your portfolio and gotten you to where you're going to have more time freedom to do what you want, as far as like maybe doing more breakthrough interviews with me and coaching and time with the family. So yeah, super excited for you, man. That was a great story. Probably not a great journey at all points, but yeah, it sounds like it was worth it.
100% worth it. And you know, William, I got to the place where it's like, okay, you know, you hear people saying, you know, if it's so easy, everybody be doing it, right? Everybody would be an investor, right? But these are the things that we go through as investors sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's a not so sexy part of the investing journey, right? And everybody just want to hear, you know, cash flow and properties, right? But, you know, as you can hear from many of our guests, like, it's a journey and things takes time, but it makes you stronger, right? And William, I would say, you know, I just want to encourage our listeners with something, a message that I really got. And I remember I was all stressed out. Like, I mean, even over the vacation, like, I was just having to deal with this, right? My whole perspective just changed. I remember when we were in Florida, I was just sitting down thinking it through, and I talked to my wife about it too. I was like, you know what? And I think I shared this with some of you all. I may not want to go through this, but I get to go through this, right? I may not, like, just think of it, like, even growing up, you know, if you had chores, I may not want to wash the dishes, but I get to wash dishes. That means I have food. You know, there's so many people starving in the world. I may not want to go through all these hurdles and obstacles to stabilize this property, but I get to go through it. I get to stabilize 12 units, bringing in 12 checks that I can take care of my family and provide the freedom that we're working towards. And so when you change your whole perspective on situations in life, that's what really helps you to get through these moments. So many people give up during these moments, but, you know, as cliche as it sounds, like, never give up, right? You get to go through these things. You get to be an investor. You get to listen to this episode right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, it probably doesn't seem like it now, and it never does when you go through it or have just gone through it. But some of those experiences are going to lend themselves to you at a much later date. And the amount of people that we've interviewed that said, this was really hard, but it actually set me up for something much later. And I was very glad to have gone through this. So yeah, it sounds like you had some pretty good experiences along the way and some more coming. So yeah, man, thanks so much for sharing that and bringing some value to our listeners. I always love hearing how other people are doing their deals and how it worked out for them. And yeah, thanks for sharing, man.
Absolutely, man. I anything I can share to help someone better their journey. And if you hear that, you know, in the background, that's my very healthy, active daughter.
Yep.
Yeah, man.
Well, awesome. Thanks for coming on, Charles. And for everybody listening, we'll catch you on the next episode of Breakthrough Investor.
Absolutely, man. And William, you know, there's so much we can cover, but, you know, I would say the one last thing I would say is for those of you listening, there's so many different deals and lessons that we can learn. And we really didn't have enough time to unpack everything today. But one of the biggest lessons I learned is always trust your discernment. Some of you call it intuition. Some of you call it your gut, those type of things, right? Because as an investor, I've been investing all these years and my discernment was telling me that just go ahead and close, Charles. I always do it like that. You could always refinance it later. It's better to lock in something sure than to lock in something that's unsure. Like even when I switched to the new lender and had all those issues and everything, I could have still, you know, locked in the deal right away, right? But I was trying to get to that 6%, which you know, logically makes sense. But there's sometimes that no book, no mentor, nothing can help you make the best choice except your discernment, your gut, telling you what's the right thing to do for you. So I would say, you know, that's a big lesson during this whole process, William.
That's great. Yeah. There's a lot to be said about just following what your intuition actually tells you. At some point, it's your property, your decision, and you're going to have to make one or the other. And regardless whether it was what you think is the right or wrong decision later, you got to make one, but you're going to learn whether that was a good or a bad decision at a later date, and you'll be able to use that in the future. So
100%. Yeah. Yep, 100%. Awesome. And even when you make a mistake or a lesson learned, you can turn that lesson into a blessing. So, what this deal became. So, thank you, William. I thank you for helping me get the story out like that. You asked some really good questions. You know, I shared some things, you know, with you on this episode that I hadn't shared with anyone. So, thank you for pulling it out of me.
We talk about it every once in a while, but truly, I never would have done podcasting if Dustin hadn't asked me to be a co-host with you, and now it's turned into I'm going to set a lot of time aside for this because I get to learn so much and it feels almost selfish. But then I remember other people are listening too, and this is going to benefit a lot of people to hear this kind of stuff and to hear how other people have persevered in their real estate journey.
Absolutely, William. And man, you know, I just want to help as many people as I can, as you and Dustin are. Like, that's the thing about us. Like, we're go-givers, not necessarily go-getters. And so, man, if y'all want to just reach out, I'm on social media, you know, just reach out to me. Don't be afraid to say hello. You know, Charles Rose Jr. is my name on social media. You can find me. Most of my handles are just, you know, Charles Rose Jr. Sometimes it's Charles L. Rose Jr., but you can find me as Charles Rose Jr. on almost any social media channel. So feel free to reach out and say hello and see if I can help you in any kind of way.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, Charles, and looking forward to diving into some of your other purchases from last year at another date.
Sounds good, man. You have a blessed day.
See ya.